You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And just like that, the Rockets look like the Rockets again. I know it's just two games, but to follow up a win over a good Indiana Pacers team on Sunday with a double-digit win on the road against a Western Conference playoff contender in Denver that started the year 9-1, yeah, I know we're still early in the season, but you can't help but feel good about it. Even going into the year, this is a game that on paper looked like it could be difficult for the Rockets to get, to win it by double digits with relative ease. Yeah, this feels like the team that was so dominant a year ago. On that positive note, welcome in to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast commentary on all things Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. This, of course, is the show where after every regular season game, we break down what happened in our usual 3-point recap style, and that's what we'll do tonight after this 109-99 win the Rockets posted in Denver, their second straight, their fifth in seven games, improving them now to 6-7 after the year, after that disastrous 1-5 start. Tonight's game led by James Harden, 22 points, 11 assists. Chris Paul, 21, 5-4. Clint Capella, 24 points, 9 rebounds. A balanced effort overall. Shouldn't forget James Ennis, 16 points, 4 rebounds. PJ Tucker, 12 points, 6 boards, a team high 41 minutes, playing with the flu or stomach virus. Plus 25 led the way yet again, two nights after he played 40 minutes, which led the team on Sunday night. The Rockets, all of a sudden, they feel like the Rockets again. And there's a number of ways we could go in the first segment of our recap, but I actually think the most important thing in the grand scheme of this season is the bounce back of Chris Paul, who tonight I mentioned 21 points, 4 assists, 5 rebounds. It's going to be a little bit overshadowed by Clint Capella, who led the team in scoring, and James Harden, who after scoring just 3 points in the first half, turned it on in a big way in the second half, ended up finishing with 22 and 11. Both Harden and Capella took advantage of the Rockets' lack of, or the Nuggets' lack of rim protection, I should say. But the reason that Chris Paul is a standout to me, the real storyline through the Rockets' 4-7 start is the inconsistency and also the suspension to Chris Paul. And by and large, we know what's happened with James Harden. A lot of that had to do with the hamstring injury. And other than an off night like he had in San Antonio, the Rockets have generally gotten, maybe not peak MVP James Harden, but a very good James Harden. The problem with the Rockets, too often this season, they have seen Chris Paul not look like the guy he was a year ago. And the fear with him being 33 years old, this being his 14th season, has been that is there some sort of aging component to it, especially after getting the big contract in the offseason. I never really bought into that only because I think if it were an aging thing that happened to him early in the year, you wouldn't see such an exaggerated fall off. Now, it wasn't just we were speculating. We did see wraps on both his shooting hand at one point and then his shooting elbow. But regardless, you see a guy of that age struggle to start the year and you can't help but wonder, is this the season where there's a little bit of fall off? I struggle to buy into that simply because you rarely see a player at that point in the aging curve just fall off a cliff. It's typically more gradual, and they aren't getting as much separation as they used to. They're slightly less efficient than they used to be. With Chris Paul, it was everything. He wasn't making layups. He wasn't making free throws. He wasn't making threes. We saw him go through 3 consecutive games where he didn't score in the first half, 3 straight games where he was 0 of 13 from 3, 4 straight games when he was 36% or below overall, not just from 3, just from the field. That's not a player subject to the aging curve. That's something, be it injury-related, mechanical, mental, that's something short-term that's going on with that player. Nonetheless, before the last 2 games, you could point out that, look, his season averages are propped up. He's still averaging roughly, 18 points, 8 assists per game, but they've been propped up by 2 really strong games, and they were few and far between, that being the Laker game way back on October 20th and the Pacer game this Sunday. The Laker game 28-10, and the Brooklyn game when he had 32-11, and those were nearly 2 weeks apart. Well, now we've had back-to-back games, starting with the Pacer game this Sunday when he had 26-5 on 8 of 13 from the field. Now tonight's game in Denver, in which he had 21 points on 7 of 12 from the field, That's back-to-back games, and he's had better than 20 points on better than 50% shooting combined, well above 50% from three-point range as well. And to me, that is the Chris Paul that we remember. Not that you expect that level of efficiency, 50-plus percent shooting, 50% plus from behind the arc every night, but you don't see it as rarely as we did to start this season. To see it put together two nights in a row, no, it's not like there were just two vintage nights that once every week or two you might see Chris Paul reach back in his bag and all of a sudden it's the old Chris Paul. No, this is what we saw. You're not going to see it every night, but enough to where he's still clearly a top 10 player in the NBA, and by some metrics more than that. Again, this is a guy who led the league in real plus minus a year ago, and of course the guy who brought home so many meaningful playoff games last year, game 5 against the Jazz to close out that series in the semis, then in the finals against the Golden State Warriors, winning both game 4 and game 5 down the stretch in the third and fourth quarters, games that were there for the taking and could have gone either direction. It was Chris Paul willing you to the finish. That's what Chris Paul, even at 33 years old, the Rockets are bullish on him, his game having a certain longevity component to it based on how cerebral he is. Well, that's what we're starting to see. And to me, that's by far the biggest takeaway. I know James Harden and Clint Capella were great. I'm not meaning to overlook that. But to some extent, against a Denver team that I know they've been better defensively in the early going, but there's no real rim protection with Nikola Jokic in the middle, you would expect James Harden and Clint Capella to feast in this matchup. That's what the Rockets did a year ago when they beat the Nuggets every time, and now they did again, which highlights just how strong of a matchup that Denver is for Houston. I think this is very favorable, and when you look at who the Rockets could conceivably play in the playoffs, I've seen enough over 2 years that I feel really good about how these two teams line up if you're on the Houston side of the fence. But big picture for the Rockets this season, the real storyline has been what's going on with Chris Paul. Do they still have that two top 10 player foundation? Because that's what made them so elite a year ago. Even when things aren't going well, you have those two top 10 players to fall back on as long as they are healthy. And to start this year, the underrated storyline, especially when they were 4-7 and coming off the losses in Oklahoma City and San Antonio, was what's going on with Chris Paul. There were plenty of reasons to believe it could be injury related, but at the same time, you needed to see evidence as he got a little bit more rest to show you that, yes, it was injury related, and assuming he's healthy, he can bounce back to the guy he's been for really the first 13 years of his Hall of Fame NBA career. Well, tonight, 21 points, 5 rebounds, 4 assists. I know there were a lot of stars for the Rockets tonight, but seeing Chris Paul bounce back, if Chris Paul is back, then in my opinion, the Rockets are back as well. It really is that simple, and that's why the Rockets have now won 5 of 7 basketball games, including 2 in a row against likely playoff teams, in my opinion, the Indiana Pacers and the Denver Nuggets. The Rockets can even their mark at 7-7 on Thursday night against, oh, I think you remember them, the defending champion Golden State Warriors. Now, as we continue our way through our 3 points recap, I want to spend most of the first segment discussing Chris Paul because to me, he's the key variable. When you look at the Rockets, why they started 4-7, why they started 1-5, it's not getting that two top 10 player performance that they could bank on a year ago, assuming health. If Chris Paul is bouncing back, and now we have 2 games in a row that he's done that. By the way, kudos to Mike D'Antoni for managing Chris Paul's minutes a little bit as well. He was limited to 32 minutes. And we've seen too often to start this year, he's been a little bit in the upper 30s. This is a game in Denver, early season, altitude factors. So to sneak a few more minutes to Eric Gordon, who had 33 rather than his usual 30, so that you could keep Chris Paul in the low 30s, that's a savvy adjustment by Mike D'Antoni that I give him some credit for. Now, Eric Gordon's still struggling from the field, 11 points, but 3 of 9, 2 of 7 from behind the arc. Did have a big assist in the final couple of minutes of the game to Clint Capella to basically seal it. Eric Gordon still needs to find his jump shot. That's obviously something for the Rockets to truly get back to the 65-1 juggernaut they were a year ago. They need Eric Gordon to figure it out. But for the Rockets, it's amazing how much more time you have to work on things like that if James Harden and Chris Paul are doing what you expect them to do. And so we discussed Chris Paul in the first segment because for the season as a whole, he has been the variable. And to see him bounce back, that's a big thing. But James Harden, to see him turn it around in game, it was a brutal first half for James Harden. It felt like he couldn't throw it in the ocean. 3 points, he wasn't getting the calls. To see him play through it, end up with 22, 11, and 5, just 4 turnovers. I know 4 is still a little high, but it's a lot better than 9 he had Sunday. He cut down the risky passes. He started attacking the rim. He even made some big plays, stripped Jokic a couple of times on the defensive end of the floor as well down the stretch of the game. You could see that in this game, James Harden realized that there was no rim protection. He had an opportunity to take it over, and that he did. And if there was one critique to his 40-point performance on Sunday, it was that, okay, he had 40 points, but he was 8 of 18 from 3. Does he have the explosion coming off the grade 2 hamstring strain to attack the rim? Well, tonight, he was just 2 of 10 from 3, but he was 5 of 6 from inside the arc. He didn't get to the line too many times. He got to the line 15 times on Sunday, only 8 times tonight, making 6 of those. But he didn't get all the calls. He didn't have the threes. And guess what? He still found a way to make an impact. 22 points and 11 assists, many of those to Clint Capella, who we'll get to momentarily. But with James, it's not that you worry about a guy who's not even to 30 years old, who's the MVP of the league. But when you see a team that's kind of, you know, at least to start the year, spiraling the way the Rockets are, you do worry about their mental health a little bit. And for James in particular, this was a game in which early on, the Rockets trailed by one at the half. A lot of the role players had things going. James Ennis started very well. PJ Tucker was making his corner threes. We mentioned Clint Capella. Chris Paul, of course, he started the game very well. James Harden, it was a little rough. And for a team that, to start the year, for various reasons, small sample I know, has not been the toughest mentally, to see James Harden turn it around mentally mid-game is really, really encouraging. And it's not just from a mental standpoint, it's also seeing him have the trust in that hamstring that even if the threes aren't falling, even if he's not getting the calls to attack and finish through traffic, again, a guy who, part of the regression we've seen a little bit from James Harden as a scorer for his career, this is a guy who, when he's at his best, is in the low to mid-60s percent at the rim. This year, he's been at about 50% at the rim. Well, tonight, again, 5 of 6 from inside the arc, and it felt like when he got to the rim, he was finishing. In fact, only missed one shot inside the arc all night long. Now, I'm not saying I'm surprised by that. It's James Harden, the MVP of the league. He deserves the benefit of the doubt. But again, when you start 1-5, when you start 4-7, it's easy to say these things should happen on paper. It's another to see them actually play out on the floor. And that's really the key story with Chris Paul, showing that he's healthy. And now I think James Harden, while there wasn't the worry there was with Chris Paul, because Chris Paul at 33 years old, look, I get it, there's going to be a little more concern with James Harden, who isn't even to 30 yet. But considering how James Harden is dependent on those hamstrings, it's not an irrelevant concern. And so to see him bounce back, and also to see him, for a team that's been, I would say, a little mentally rattled, a little here we go again through that 1-5, 4-7 start, it's not so much that I think James Harden would be that discouraged after all he's been through by 10 or 12 games, but other guys, especially the newcomers, the James Ennises, the Gary Clarks of the world, they might be a little discouraged by what's going on. Isaiah Hartenstein as well. Bad habits is what you hear a lot of NBA veterans call it. Well, James Harden, a guy who's been there, done that, to be able to turn around a game mid-game in which it seems like nothing is going his way, and all of a sudden by the end of it, it feels like on both ends of the floor, he is dominating it on the road against a quality team. Now, Denver has lost 4 straight games to fall to 9-5, but that's still a very good record. That's the reason they started 9-1. I fully expect them to be a playoff team. That's the kind of leader you want your MVP to be, because it's not just what it does for James as an individual, it's also the example it sets for the rest of that 8-man rotation. And we'll talk about some others in the third segment, but for now, I want to give credit to a guy who was on the feeding end of a lot of those James Harden assists, 11 of them, and that was Clint Capella. 24 points, 9 rebounds in 36 minutes in Denver at altitude. He actually played 36 compared to Nikola Jokic's 33. At altitude, this is the situation where with Clint Capella a year ago, you didn't know if he had the stamina. And the reason that James Harden was so lethal on the attack tonight is because with Denver not really having a rim protector, then if there was help that was going to come on James Harden, then it was almost a certainty that Clint Capella would have a clear lane to the bucket, or at least be able to finish in traffic over whoever the swing person would be to him. So the Rockets have the advantage athletically in this matchup. That's why I think it's advantageous to them, even though Denver has a ton of skill offensively, so many playmakers, and of course with the center, Nikola Jokic, that had 7 assists tonight and is as good a passing big, really, as the game has ever seen. But for the Rockets on the offensive end of the court, and again, this is the identity for the Rockets, Now, defensively, there's been a lot made of their turnaround. Five of the last six games, they've held opponents below 100 points now. This is a very good Denver team. So, yeah, you give credit to Capella for that end as well. Also, the entire Rockets collectively. Mentioned P.J. Tucker earlier, James Ennis. We'll talk about them more in segment three. But, yeah, the Rockets defense, they've been very good of late. That's five or six opponents below 100. They only went above 100. The Indiana Pacers, a good team, got to a whopping 103. That's tremendous in this NBA of higher scoring. But for the Rockets, their identity is on offense. They were historically elite a year ago. And through the first 11 games, when they started 4-7, they were in the bottom four of the league in every major category, be it just traditional counting stats, efficiency, whatever it may be, they were dreadful. The last two games, they scored 115, they scored 109, they've looked efficient doing it. James Harden and Chris Paul look like themselves. All of a sudden, this looks like the Rockets' formula from a year ago. And that's not to say the defense isn't important. No, the defense is very important. That's what took them up a level from 55 wins the year before to 65 wins a year ago. But in both cases, the offense was better than the defense. And then when you see the offense go from historically elite to bad, yeah, that's the storyline. And to see them get it fixed, of course, it helps when the guards, James Harden and Chris Paul, have the ball go through the bucket. But in this case, of course, it's about the viability of Clint Capella and his vertical spacing. And he's given them that all year. Now, to Capella's credit, I think he's gotten better defensively as well. There were times late in the game where I don't think the Nuggets wanted to challenge him at all on the defensive end of the floor. There were a couple of times, I think Monte Morris on a switch didn't look like he wanted to do anything off the dribble late in games against Capella. That's reminiscent of what we saw a year ago, not the struggles he had early in the year. Maybe he's getting into better fitness after going through both a hand injury and a foot injury in the preseason. Whatever it may be. But the real story to me, and it's been an underrated storyline for the Rockets this year, it's the minutes. For Clint Capella to be able to play 36 tonight at altitude, for the year he's averaging nearly 34 minutes per game after being just at 27.5 a year ago, that's big. Because in this matchup, that level of vertical spacing, that's what opens up the driving lanes for James Harden, for Chris Paul to get to the mid-range, for James Ennis to cut back door. Clint Capella, it's not just what he does, and yes, he did finish well tonight. 24 points, 11 of 15 shooting, 9 boards. But it's his ability to stay out there for 36 minutes that is so crucial. Because it's a game, Nuggets have a lot of playmaking, but the Rockets have the athletic advantage. It's just a matter of can their playmakers play enough minutes, especially in this 8-man rotation for the time being. Who knows what's going on with Carmelo Anthony still out due to illness. Gerald Green out with the ankle sprain. Brandon Knight out coming back from the infection in his surgically repaired knee. So the Rockets have an 8-man rotation for the time being, and they've just got to make the best of it. Now, it could get to 9 on Thursday. It sounds like Gerald Green could make his return against the Warriors. But for now, having guys that can go 36 minutes instead of 30, that's a big, big deal. And that's what Clint Capella gave you most of all. It's not just the fact that he's making shots and he's playing defense. It's that he's staying out there, because him staying out there opens up the game for James Harden and Chris Paul to do what they do. And specifically, that's the formula in the playoffs for the Rockets a year ago, when they all of a sudden had that big leap from Clint Capella. We saw what he did against the Timberwolves and the Jazz, and then, of course, in Game 7 against the Warriors. And even though, you know, the Warriors at times, they're kind of an outlier because of how they can scheme you out of those bigger lineups. But at times in that series, Clint Capella was very impactful there as well. We're starting to see that version of Clint. I'm not going to say he's all the way back just based on a few games, but it is trending very, very well. And to see him continue to play this many minutes, this is exactly the evolution you want to see from Clint in year five, even after getting that big contract. So to me, Chris Paul, certainly the headliner tonight, just because of the grand scheme of the season. He's the variable that seems to be getting on track and is the biggest switch from when you started 4-7. But James Harden and Clint Capella, they seem to be getting their footing as well. And when those three have it going, when your big three, we know what the record was a year ago, 44-5. I don't know if they're going to replicate that this year just based on the slow start. But the bottom line is, over their history with the Rockets, when they have those three players in peak form, the Rockets have an incredibly high winning percentage. And based on what we've seen the last two games, I feel pretty confident that that's going to be the case over the balance of this season as well. Not quite the same winning percentage, but still pretty damn good. Now, as we close out the recap, we spent most of the first couple of segments discussing the stars in this game, the 109-99 win over the Denver Nuggets, improving the Rockets to 6-7 on the year. Now their fifth win in the last seven games, coming off that brutal 1-5 start. The stars getting going is the biggest story, because for the Rockets, quite frankly, not getting what you would expect a year ago, or what you would expect this year based on the performance a year ago from the star players, has been the biggest reason for their drop-off, especially on the offensive end of the floor. And so in terms of getting where the Rockets want to go, getting them fixed, then yes, that's far and away the biggest storyline for the Rockets, to see Chris Paul, James Harden, Clint Capella all playing this well in the same game, really all playing this well for the second consecutive game in a row. And with Clint Capella coming off a banged knee in the first quarter against the Indiana Pacers, after Sunday night, it wasn't even clear if he'd play tonight. Well, he wasn't listed on the injury report. Again, played 36 minutes. So it's great to see, just as it is with Harden and Paul, it's nice to see Capella not having any medical concerns to worry about either, especially heading into this heavyweight fight on Thursday against the Warriors. That said, there were two role players that were very, very big tonight. P.J. Tucker, I don't know what more you can say about the guy. He played 40 minutes Sunday, 41 minutes tonight, battling either the flu or the stomach virus, some sort of illness, but he's led the team in minutes both nights. Tonight, plus 25, which far and away led the team in plus minus, 12 points, made 4 of his 7 threes, 6 rebounds. He is everywhere the Rockets need him to be. He's efficient. He doesn't force the action unless he's open. He is effectively, an analogy I'm going to borrow from Ali Bajani of The Athletic, I saw in his Monday recap column. He was making the comparison of Tucker this year to Ariza a year ago, and he was using that in the context of letting Gary Clark, a rookie, slide into the role of what PJ did a year ago. And by what the comparison he was trying to make there was that you're seeing Tucker take on even more of a leadership role, be even more assertive, because one of the reasons Ariza was so confident, he's a guy who had been there 4 years. And when it came to especially James Harden, Clint Capella, the guys who had been there, done that, Ariza was a lot more confident in his own skin and in the system than someone who was a newcomer a year ago like P.J. Tucker. And that's one of the things you lose when a guy who's been there for a while, like Ariza has been, leaves in the offseason. Well, beyond just P.J. continuing the level of defense we saw a year ago, he's one of the most valuable in the league. There's a reason the Rockets would not give him up in any proposals for Jimmy Butler. Beyond just his value individually as a defender, to see him take it up another level in terms of, I would say, his overall leadership on both ends of the floor, it is incredibly welcome. Now, he's always been a leader in the locker room because that's just the kind of guy he is. But to see him become more assertive offensively and defensively, more confident in exactly where he should be, calling out the switches, the moves for other players on the court, that makes it all the easier for newcomers like Gary Clark and James Ennis to focus on what they can control. Because it's not really fair to expect in year one either Clark or Ennis to step into the Ariza role at least totally. Now, maybe physically they can, but Ariza did a lot of things in terms of just overall court savvy, being aware on the floor. That's not really fair to expect a guy, especially a rookie in Clark's case, but not even a young guy like James Ennis that doesn't have that much NBA experience, and especially not in this system, to all of a sudden take on. That's a responsibility that comes with a lot of time and experience in the NBA, especially in one system. So to see PJ evolve, not just in terms of his physical game, which was already good, but his mental game, to where all of a sudden he's able to take more minutes, he's able to take more responsibility, and it makes it easier for the young players like James Ennis and Gary Clark to compartmentalize. Sunday was Gary Clark's night. He played 33 minutes. We sung his praises on Sunday's postgame show. Well, tonight was James Ennis' night. All of a sudden, James Ennis played 34 minutes, and Clark played just 15. Ennis was the guy who was 6 of 8 from the field, 2 of 4 from 3, 16 points, 4 boards, plus 9. He seemed a lot more in control defensively. He didn't seem to be gambling too much, which is something I've been critical of him for doing early in the year. The steals he got, the blocks were much more in control within the flow. He seemed much more disciplined, and offensively, he just seemed, you know, it helps when you make his first couple of threes, which he did, because that makes the opposing defense have to stick out on him. And then based on that, he seemed much more assertive in knowing when to cut to the rim when James Harden was on the drive. And we mentioned that, you know, if they're going to help on Clint Capella, then okay, then there should be a cutting lane for someone like a James Ennis. And he was able to take advantage of that. Now, I'm not going to say it was a great night for Gary Clark, because it wasn't, but when you're looking at guys like James Ennis and Gary Clark, it's not really realistic, especially against good teams, to expect both of them to be on a given night. Generally, what you want is at least one of them on a given night to give you quality production. Sunday it was Gary Clark, tonight it was James Ennis. And who knows, maybe you have both of them back on Thursday doing their thing, or maybe you get Gerald Green as well. But they're both young, they're both growing. And it's nice to see James Ennis do it, because that reduces the pressure on an undrafted rookie in Gary Clark. I don't care how savvy he is. If you're expecting him to do every night what he did on Sunday, then ultimately that's going to be a little bit too much, because a lot of being a good defender just comes with experience. So to see Jones Ennis have that kind of game a night after what Gary Clark did, that's really encouraging, because I think in the long run, the best thing for both of those guys is to see the other playing well, because that's going to relieve the pressure on each of those guys to where if they don't have it on a given night, it's okay. It's not your night. You can turn to the other one a little bit, and that way you can get the seasoning for both of those guys without necessarily having to ride them and all of a sudden just lead to bad results for the team based on one of those guys, it just not being their night. So by and large, if those two guys continue to play well, even if they alternate games from time to time, that's going to help each in their development for a new system in Houston and with Gary Clark, just a brand new league as he adjusts to this pace. To see James Ennis playing well, that's the best thing for him. But P.J. Tucker is the glue. I mean, we refer to him as a glue guy for the entire team, but he's also a glue guy for those defenders, because it hits his ability, even as a guy who technically starts at the four, to be so versatile, not just physically, but also mentally, in terms of how he reads the opposing offense. That's what makes it all the easier for James Ennis and Gary Clark to compartmentalize. And all of a sudden, if you're not asking both of those guys to all of a sudden replace Trevor Ariza and Luke Bamute to fill that formula from a year ago, if P.J. Tucker is able to evolve into at least part of that, then it makes it all the easier for those young guys, James Ennis and Gary Clark, to buy a little bit of time, and hopefully over the course of the season, they get more consistent to where you don't have one on game, one off game. Right now, it's early in the year. Those things are going to happen, and the best thing for their development is, A, the consistency of a veteran like P.J. Tucker that can take on even more responsibility in this scheme as he gets more comfortable, and B, the presence of both James Ennis, now healthy, and Gary Clark, so that if one has a bad night, it's okay. The Rockets still have the other one, and yeah, it would help if Gerald Green gets back healthy as well. Because ultimately, the way that I think young players develop, if it's not your night, it's not your night. You don't have to force them out there. That's not good for the team. It also builds bad habits. And at this point, if both those guys are playing well and you can get Gerald Green back, all of a sudden the rotation is deep enough. And Brandon Knight shouldn't be too far off as well to where the Rockets, I know they have an 8-man rotation now, but you can see a path to where they could have 10 relatively soon. And that's not even mentioning whatever happens with Carmelo Anthony in that roster spot. Stay tuned for that. Anyway, I think that's enough Rockets talk for one day. This joyous post-game Tuesday episode after the 109-99 win. As always, I appreciate you guys so much for listening. If you want more content before our next episode, the best place to get it is on Twitter. I'm on there at Ben Dubose. The show is on there at Locked On Rockets. Also got a Facebook account, facebook.com/LockedOnRockets, a website, LockedOnRockets.com, email address, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. All of those are places where you can ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, advertising inquiries, pretty much anything that has to do with making this podcast better, the experience for you as a diehard Rockets fan, or you as a human being, don't hesitate to let me know. Also, real-time analysis, if something happens on the fly with Carmelo Anthony and his ongoing away-from-the-team situation, will he be released or will he come back to the team? We're still waiting for clarity on that. Well, Twitter is probably where you'll have it even before this podcast. In addition to Twitter, though, if you would like to subscribe to the podcast and how you can get these episodes even before I post it to my Twitter feed, then please do. Again, subscriptions, very welcome. They're free. iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify. Odds are, wherever you listen to your podcast, you can find us, because we're part of a great network of shows at the Locked On Podcast Network, local experts across the NBA, NFL, including the Houston Texans, college sports, including Texas A&M Aggies, and Major League Baseball. So if you would subscribe to us and leave us a 5-star review, that's how you'll get the benefit of getting episodes right when they come out, and that's how we'll get the benefit of looking attractive to potential advertisers and keeping the business model working here at Locked On Rockets, the only daily podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. Once again, the happy final from Denver on Tuesday evening, Rockets 109, Nuggets 99. Rockets have now won 5 of 7 games and are now 6-7 on the year after that dreadful 1-5 start. They seem to be bouncing back. They have an opportunity to bounce back to .500 in their next game on Thursday, but it will be tough. That game, of course, while at home and on national TV, on TNT, it is against the defending champion Golden State Warriors. So buckle up for that one. We will have some pregame coverage before, but for now, have a good night and come back soon for our pregame Warriors talk right here at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily coverage of Houston Rockets basketball.